Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now happening on our website, your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. As the official census takers make their rounds from now through the summer to collect those 10 question forms, we are collecting your stories of change in our communities over the last decade. We have a separate page for each county in our listening area. This week, we're focusing especially on Bergen County. We want all you Bergen listeners to add something about how your community has changed demographically, politically, whatever. Join us in creating your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. We'll talk about Bergen on the air next Tuesday. In the meantime, all you Bergen listeners, go add a story about how your community has changed significantly in the last 10 years. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Anyone with a TV on in the background or a stock ticker on their computer screen at work probably sat up and took notice yesterday when the Dow Jones average dropped more than 1,000 points in about 17 minutes. Then almost as quickly as it dropped, the Dow rebounded nearly 700 points. What's going on with the volatile market? Well, Felix Salmon, economic reporter for Reuters, joins us now to try and make sense of this crazy Dow day and how it ties in with the other economic news. Felix, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
The actual downturn in stocks, and the Dow did finish down more than 300 points yesterday, appear to be tied to more bad news from Greece and their economic situation. But what happened yesterday that started that incredible plunge?
Well, right now we're in this situation where any down move in the market is going to be blamed on Greece. That's just a sort of journalistic trope at this point, and you can't take it too seriously. There's absolutely no conceivable market move which won't be blamed on Greece. Certainly the big move down, the 1,000-point point drop, had nothing to do with Greece. That was more to do with the way that markets work these days, with a lot of automatic computerized trading. That wasn't selling by people who were panicking and they thought to themselves, oh no, the stocks are falling, I had better sell. That was all computers and stop loss orders and algorithms and bids drying up and trading moving off the New York Stock Exchange and onto these smaller electronic exchanges which don't have the same degree of liquidity, and all of these very technical factors which basically make markets very volatile on rare occasions when things go a little bit
haywire. So have they confirmed the theory that some trader wrote billion instead of million on a sell order, and then that triggered a lot of computer generated selling?
No. That has not been confirmed, and frankly, I'm a little bit skeptical about that one. This is a case of Occam's razor. Like, you don't need the so-called fat finger to explain this market. You can explain what happened with just by looking at the way that a little bit of selling, you know, an unusual amount of selling in something like Procter & Gamble can dry up liquidity, which moves it onto a different exchange, which brings the price down even further. And then we have this weird situation with the Dow. It's what's known as an average rather than an index. And so one lurch down in Procter & Gamble can mean 100 points wiped off the Dow in a second. And then that just sparks a whole bunch of new automated selling. So it might have happened. There might have been a fat finger, but I'm not convinced.
So why did it come back as quickly as it descended?
Because it wasn't real trading. There was actually not a lot of volume. What happened was the bids just evaporated. It was briefly, for that sort of 10-15 minute period, a no bid market. No one was buying because everyone was just shell shocked, and they were looking at the market and they were going, what is going on? We don't understand this. And it was mainly the computers which were just going in there trying to clear and failing to clear. So when the human beings started trading the market again, it went back to the kind of levels that human beings think reasonable.
Would you call it a panic?
Well, I guess it was the sort of artificial intelligence version of a panic. It was computers panicking rather than people.
So what is the latest news out of Greece?
the latest news out of Greece is, well, it's not news really. The Greek government is trying to push through an austerity package in the face of very determined opposition from both the unions and from the right wing in the political opposition in Greece. And so that makes the chances of them actually keeping their promises very slim. As far as the markets are concerned, there's this thing, you've heard about the credit default swaps. We've all heard about them. They're now trading at 1,000 basis points over, which sounds scary, and it is. It means that no one really believes that Greece is going to be able to avoid a default over the medium to long term.
What are the implications of Greece's debt problem for the United States?
That's an incredibly good question. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Basically, in the short term, the more that Greece looks scary and the more that people worry about the euro and the eurozone and Greece and credit risk in Europe, what that does is it forces people into the relative safety of the United States, which is, it might not be a safe country, but it's a safer country in terms of default risk and the chance that the country is going to default. In the medium to long term, however, what this means is that people don't trust countries anymore in the way that they used to trust countries never to default. You know, at least the industrialized, big European first world countries. And so that's going to make borrowing the kind of money that the U.S. needs to borrow over the next few years that much more difficult. And put a little bit of risk in there.
Can you take a minute and hash out a little bit why the Dow Jones, all these U.S. blue chip companies, are so reactive to news about the solvency of another country, even assuming a global economy and a level of interconnectedness? Why would those particular blue chip stocks react so dramatically?
Because of the interconnectedness of financial markets. Well, as I say, on the one hand, let's not get carried away with blaming every single market uptick and downtick on what's going on in Greece, or rather blaming every downtick on what's going on in Greece. It's the big news story that people are looking at, and the market is volatile, and people are drawing a causal connection there where there might not actually be one. The market, it could just be volatile and moving up and down and have nothing to do with Greece. That's the first possibility. But the second thing is that you have very interconnected markets, and there you get these things called correlations, where one market moves, and then when one market moves, another market moves. And when you have a volatile and crazy time like now, or like we saw back in 2008, then those correlations can appear from nowhere. Markets which never used to be correlated become correlated very quickly, and so it's entirely conceivable that you could have a correlation between Greek credit default swap spreads and the Dow, for instance, for no particular fundamental reason, but just because of the incredible way in which markets are connected to each other.
We're talking about some of the crazy economy news this week with Felix Salmon, economic reporter for Reuters. And Steve in East Northport has a theory as to why the market might have plunged suddenly by 1,000 points yesterday. Steve, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, the reason why the market went down so much is to what your guest was saying about early about sensitivity. They're called beta ratings, and each stock has a particular beta rating that has to do with how they are affected by other things. But on to the other point, it was an erroneous trade. It had nothing to do with a billion shares or a million shares. It had to do with that stock was stopped for about 90 seconds from human trading. The computers then took over and hit the next bid, and that's why it came back so quickly. So it was an erroneous trade. I don't even know if that trade even count today.
When you say erroneous trade, is it traceable to one particular trade that was made in error? Because I think our guest was saying that there is not evidence for that.
Yes, it was made. What happened is that when you have specialists, which is what that stock trades with, it's traded by human beings. And what happened was is that they held the stock for about 90 seconds. So what happened was the electronic market started to look for buyers, and because it works in milliseconds, it went to where the next available bid was. So there was a mark. The stock went from 60 to like 49. That 49 print was a mark to market that signified, and that stock was down maybe 25 or 30%. Now, because it's a bellwether stock, that sends a shockwave through the rest of the market, because the Dow's only made up of 30 companies. But once it was realized that that's what would happen, then the trades that followed, the stock went up almost in seconds by big, 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 big gaps because they opened the trading after those 90 seconds. So it was a trade that marked to the market, but I don't know if they actually counted that trade today. I don't know if that mark actually counted because of the way it was done.
Steve, thank you for your call. And there's a lot of Wall Street jargon in there, Felix, that some people in our listening audience will understand, some won't, like mark to market. But do you think he's basically right?
There's a lot of truth to what Steve was saying. Yeah, what he was talking about is this one particular stock called Procter & Gamble. You have all of their products in lying around your kitchen and your bathroom. And that stock had a lot of very crazy, weird volatility. As Steve said, because what happened was that the trading moved off the New York Stock Exchange onto places which have essentially no human involvement in them at all. The stock market more generally was falling before that trade happened, and it kept on falling after that trade happened. But that particular trade was clearly a pretty important part of why the stock market fell as far and as fast as it did.
So if something like this, which may have actually been an erroneous trade, can create such swings in a market that already is relying on a lot of people not to panic, is high-speed computer trading really such a hot idea?
That you have put your finger on it. What happens is that high-speed computer trading, people defend it because they say that it provides liquidity, which it does 99% of the time. It makes the stock prices that much more accurate. It makes it that much easier to buy and sell stocks. But the problem is that just when you need liquidity, this is the sort of bad kind of liquidity. It's not a good kind of liquidity, because the good kind of liquidity is the old-fashioned specialists and market makers who will always just have a bid for a stock. What we saw yesterday was bad liquidity, which is only there in good times, and in bad times it just disappears. So, yeah, I think you're right, and that these automated computer trades, we want to slow them down. It might be useful to tax them just a little bit. Every single trade have a couple of hundredths of a percentage point tax on every single trade. Normal human beings wouldn't notice it, but it would add up for these computers who trade every millisecond.
Robert on our website asks, could something like yesterday's market drop be caused by cyber terrorism?
And again, that's a really good question. There's no evidence that it was. In this particular case, I think it's pretty clear that it was not. But that doesn't mean that cyber terrorism couldn't try and replicate that and make it even worse. The markets are very complex systems, and as we've seen yesterday, they can break. And if they can break, then they can be broken by a malicious actor.
Before you go, for those non-Dow obsessed among us, April was the second straight month of positive job growth, with a pretty large number released this morning, 290,000 jobs created nationwide in April. Definitely good news for our beleaguered economy. But at the same time, the report of the unemployment rate went up from 9.7% to 9.9%. How do those two things happen at the same time?
Well, you're right. It's good news. The number of jobs went up. And because jobs are coming back, people who weren't part of what's known as the labor force, people who weren't even bothering to look for work before, are now looking for work. And once you start looking for work, then you're counted as unemployed. So what we're seeing is a lot of people being counted as unemployed now who weren't even counted as unemployed before because they weren't even looking for work.
And to put this good news in some bleaker perspective, you wrote on your blog entry today, remember that 6.7 million people have now been unemployed for more than 6 months, 46% of the total unemployment figure. We will literally never find jobs for all of them. Many will never be employed again, which is the real underlying tragedy of this recession and of the jobless recovery. Ouch.
It's a painful, what we're seeing right now, with the incredible amount of attention which is being paid to financial markets and to corporate markets, is a lot of money being made in money markets. But in real America, we're only just beginning to see employment figures tick up. And 290,000 is a good figure, and we're all happy that it happened. But we still have 10% unemployment, and that is going to be a big drag on the economy for the foreseeable future.
And it'll take years, even at this rate of growth, to make up those 6 million plus jobs that were lost in the crash over the last several years. This just in from the AP, by the way. President Obama says regulatory authorities are now looking into yesterday's wild swings in the stock market with an eye toward protecting investors and preventing something like that from happening again. So we'll see what they come up with. Felix Salmon with Reuters, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, and you can start calling right now, a Mother's Day call-in on when you realized, oh my God, I am actually like my mother. When did this happen for you? And how did it change you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And this will include a cameo from my mother. Stay tuned.